I'm Chuck. Pull your chair a little closer tonight. This one doesn't start with me. It starts with a dock, with boots on wet planks, with the lake doing something it has no business doing. We're used to storms, we're used to flooding, we're used to things breaking in a loud, dramatic way. This wasn't that. This was quiet, and it's happened more than once. Let me show you something. The storm passed in the night. By morning, the lake is where the street should be. Not flooding over the banks, that you'd understand. That's what storms do. This is different. The lake has risen into town while you slept, crept up the planks, over the road, between buildings, quiet, like it's claiming ground that belonged to it. You've walked this dock every morning for 3 years and know it the way you know your own front steps, the groan of the fourth board, the way the third piling leans, the exact spot where the water meets the dock. This morning, none of it matches. The dock is underwater, submerged, like someone had carefully lowered the entire thing into the lake while you slept. Barrels that should be stacked on dry planks are floating. A coil of rope drifts past, still in a coil. The posts you tie off to are just gone. You look for them. They're still there. They're just underwater, where they don't belong. You reach for the cleat to steady yourself, and your hand closes on water. The cleat's submerged. What the hell, you think? You've tied up to that thing 1,000 times. You could do it blind. You know exactly where it sits. It's always chest height, easy to reach, solid iron. But it's underwater. The lake is 6 to 8 feet higher than it should be. Not after days of rain, after one night. That's when you realize in that tight spot just below your ribs, Lake Erie doesn't do this. Barrels for Detroit that should be stacked by the shed aren't there. They drift against one another, nudging and turning slowly. You walk past the other loaders and notice how quiet everyone is. There's no swearing, no jokes, none of the usual morning noise. Just boots pushing water aside. One of the men presses his hand against the post and studies the dark, wet line like he's measuring a child against the doorway. He says, "It's 6 feet higher than yesterday." Another says 8. No one argues. The numbers hardly matter. It's just more lake than belongs here. You wait for the wind to come back and explain it. A blow like last night's ought to have a reason. It ought to leave some kind of mess behind. Instead, the harbor goes still. The chop settles. The banging eases. Within a few minutes, the surface itself smooths out until it looks heavy and flat, like poured lead. The quiet that follows isn't right. It's too complete. That's when you notice the mark the water has left on the boards. It's moving. At first, you think it's your eyes playing tricks. Then a rope loosens and a fender sags. A man steps into his boat and nearly stumbles because the hull has dropped lower than it was. No one says anything. You all just stand there watching the same slow thing happen. The water keeps slipping down the posts. Mud shows along the shoreline, the rocks, the broken ends of things that have been underwater so long no one knew they existed. It doesn't drain the way a river drains. There's no current, no sucking sound, no rushing. It simply slips back, quiet and deliberate, as though the lake has remembered it had an important appointment to go to. 200 miles west in Detroit, they were about to find out where that appointment was. The sky is the same gray, the air just as still. The storm passed hours ago. From a distance, the lake looks ordinary. You walk down to the dock, thinking about the nets you have to shake out and the lines you need. All the same tasks you usually do every day. Halfway down the planks, you notice how loud your steps sound. The dock answers back with a hollow knock. There's no water against the pilings. That soft, constant bump and slide that has always been there is just gone. The boat sits oddly, not floating, just resting. You give the rope a pull and it comes back slack. When you step to the edge and look down, there's mud where the lake should be. It's a wide stretch of mud, 20 or 30 feet out. It's the bare bottom of the harbor in the morning light. Weeds are flattened out like wet hair, rocks. A length of chain, the old lake bed, opened up like a secret everyone can see. And for a moment you assume you're mistaken. Lakes don't leave, they stay put. That's the whole point. But here you are. The lake had left. More men come down the path behind you, each of them slowing in the same place, each of them stopping and staring. Nobody steps out onto the flats. Nobody seems eager to test the mud. You all just stand there looking at it. Work doesn't begin. There's nothing sensible to do when the water's missing. Out beyond the flats, the surface still looks unchanged, a dull gray sheet under the sky, doing what it's always done. For a moment, you wonder if it's simply how things are going to be now. Mud where the harbor used to be, boats resting on their sides like animals bedded down for the night. Then someone points, far out, something is different. At first you think, it's just light shifting on the surface. Then you see the line, the whole lake lifting, not breaking into waves, not white capping, just rising together, like someone drawing a sheet back across the bed. The water comes in fast. It doesn't crash or roar, it's just unrelenting and sure of itself. It reaches the pilings and keeps climbing, slapping wood hard enough to rattle the boards beneath, overshooting, threatening to take the dock this time. Then it slides back, then forward again. The boats lift first, hulls scraping free of the mud with a low groan. Lines snap tight. A loose board spins past like it's just escaped. The lake keeps rising higher than it ought to, crowding the dock, climbing the post like it means to take everything back. For a moment you think it just isn't going to stop. Then it slides back, then pushes forward again, back and forth, each push smaller than the last, the whole harbor rocking with it. It's like it's trying to remember how high it's supposed to be, and nobody says a word. You all just stand there, boots wet, hands hanging at your sides, watching the water settle into place, and then it starts to look like it always has. After a minute, the usual sounds come back, a rope tapping wood, a hull bumping a piling, those small noises you never notice until they're gone. The lake sits flat and calm, like it made a mistake, then came back like nothing happened. Someone lets out a breath. Another man laughs, a short laugh, like he was embarrassed. You look at each other, waiting for someone to explain what just happened. And nobody does. And for years, it's just another odd lake story. No one really talked about it. It's just kind of faded. There wasn't really anything to say about it. The water went out, then it came back. Strange thing, but that's all it was. Eventually, somebody with a bit of schooling would pin a label on it. In a cavernous lecture hall, they would draw diagrams, take a puff of their pipe, blink a couple times, and point to the chart. Of course, the wind and pressure can take such a phenomenon, yes. Very interesting, but very scientific with the shape of the Great Lakes Basin, you see. Seiche. A nice, tidy word. It almost makes it sound small. Which would be comforting if the lake had agreed to stop after that day, but it didn't. About 100 years later, it tried the same trick again, but this time, it wasn't a few dockhands staring at mud. It was Chicago. The summer of 1954. One of those Midwest heat waves where the air feels too wet and heavy before breakfast. The day before had topped 100 degrees, and by morning the sidewalks were already giving the heat back. So anyone with sense drifted down toward Lake Michigan looking for a breeze. It was mostly fishermen. There were a few dads with their kids and some couples killing time. It was just a normal Saturday morning. A quick squall rolled through early with its dark clouds, hard wind, and quick rain. It blew out over the lake and disappeared. The sky cleared, the water flattened like it usually does, and everyone wandered back out like nothing happened. By 9:30, there were maybe 50 people stretched across Montrose Breakwater. A conservation officer named Herbert Reederer was writing a ticket to Theodore Stempinski for fishing without a license. A lifeguard captain, Joseph Picararo, had just come on shift and was watching the harbor. A father named John Jarowski was with his 18-year-old son, showing him how to bait a hook. May and Edward Gabriel were leaning on rocks together, planning to renew their marriage vows later that summer. It was ordinary people on an ordinary morning. Then Reederer noticed his boots were wet, just a little water slipping over the rocks. Annoying more than alarming. He stepped back, looked up, and heard what he later called a rush. It was just fast-moving water with no thunder or wind, and then the whole lake leaned forward. It wasn't a breaking wave or surf, really, just a lot of heavy water. 8 or 10 feet of it, all at once, climbing the breakwater like it wanted to clear the place off. Tackle boxes lifted and drifted away, rods skittered across the stone. Picararo and the other lifeguards knocked flat and came up laughing, thinking it was just a splash. Then there was shouting. Jarowski was gone first. At Montrose, the water moved so fast, most people never really got a chance to run. Some clung to rocks, others got tangled in their own lines and tackle boxes. Reederer said he saw a woman riding a crest of the surge almost upright before the harbor swallowed her. The water slowly pulled itself back, taking a shoe with it. May and Edward Gabriel never made it back. Stempinski, the man with the ticket, apparently stopped to grab his tackle box before he ran. He shouldn't have. They found him days later. A 16-year-old boy lost his father but survived only because he ducked into a nearby boathouse when the water hit. It lasted less than a minute. Then the lake laid back down and pretended it had just played a cruel joke. Innocent, like nothing happened. 8 people dead on a clear, sunny morning with no storm in sight. Later, the reports would explain it. They said wind shoving a wall of water down the length of the lake, the surge bouncing off the far shore, and racing back across 60 miles of water like bathwater in a tub. We were more modern by now. It had different words like medio tsunami as a technical term. It didn't matter what they called it. From the pier, it was calm. Then it wasn't. By the time you get to our century, you'd think we'd have it figured out. We've named it, measured it, modeled it on computers, and turned it into forecast graphics with little blue arrows and helpful labels, clear little diagrams that make the whole thing look manageable. They use the word bathtub now. The storm hits, wind pushes the water, the lake sloshes from one end to the other. It's all very tidy on paper. And sure enough, on December 29th of 2025, that's exactly what happened. Winter storm Ezra came through and leaned hard on Lake Erie. Another big Midwestern storm with 60, 70, 80 mile per hour winds and nothing to slow it down. Lake Erie is shallow and long, so when you shove on one end, the whole thing really does slide like a bathtub. The National Weather Service went on television ahead of time and explained it calmly, like teachers who had practiced the lesson, wind, pressure, bathtub physics. They even used the word seiche with the kind of confidence that suggests this was all perfectly ordinary behavior. Buffalo, they said, would get the water. Toledo would lose it. And Lake Erie was very polite about it. It did exactly that. In Buffalo, the water piled onto the shore. 8 feet of it in places. It shoved ice into the waterfront restaurants, flooded low roads, knocked out power to 30,000 homes. It looked like the usual winter mess, only wetter and meaner. 200 miles west, around Toledo, the opposite happened. The lake left quietly. Docks hung there uselessly over open air. Boats sat crooked in the mud. Rocks that hadn't seen daylight in years just appeared. It was like somebody pulled back a curtain. It was that familiar way of describing it. And here's the part that makes me smile a little. Within minutes, people were walking out on the lake bed. They weren't cautious or reverent. They just did what people always do when something strange creates a playground. Phones out, hoodies up, kids throwing rocks, folks poking around like it was a yard sale. Videos popping up online with captions like treasure hunting or look what we found, as if the lake had emptied itself purely for our entertainment. A guy named Austin Latta, down near Luna Pier, told a reporter it felt like being a kid again, which is exactly the sort of thing you'd say when the world briefly rearranges itself in your favor. In the same breath, he mentioned there was probably safety hazards people should watch out for. Then he went out anyway, which feels about right. Officials were reminding everyone that what goes out comes back fast, sometimes faster than you expect. People nodded and kept walking. No one died that time. The warnings worked mostly. Folks stayed off the breakwaters. The lake returned more or less on schedule, and it sloshed around for a day before settling back into itself like nothing had happened. Science did its job. The forecasts were right. We understood everything, and we still walked out there. Of course we did, because here's the truth you don't see on the weather map. It doesn't matter how well we explain it or how many satellites we watch or how neat the diagrams look with the little blue arrows. The lake doesn't care. It never cares. It leaves when the wind tells it to leave and comes back when gravity tells it to come back. And every single time, we wander out like kids who just discovered an eternal treasure. And I wish I could pretend that I'm above that, that I would stay back on shore with my coffee and my good sense. But I can't. At all. I'd walk out there too, just to see what the lake decided to show me, which is how we keep getting in the way of ourselves, and how the lake keeps reminding us whose place this really is. You know what makes me laugh about this one? The meteorologist had done everything right. They had the maps and the models and those neat little graphics with blue arrows showing exactly where the water was going to go. Calm voices explaining it twice. They probably told their own moms not to go out in the shoreline. Stay off the breakers, stay off the flats. When it comes back fast. All perfectly reasonable advice. And still, within an hour, people were out there. No one's rolling up their pants, it's December. The wind cuts straight through you like you deserve it. Mud grabbing at your boots like it wants to keep them. Within 30 seconds, your cuffs are soaked and your socks are cold. And you've got that squishy feeling that says, well, these are ruined now. And you keep walking anyway, because there's an old tire half buried out there. And for some reason, it suddenly feels very important that someone check on it. A guy with a stick poking at the mud like treasure might pop out. Some kid dragging a chunk of wood like he's just discovered pirate loot. Two women crouched over a length of chain like archaeologists instead of accountants who absolutely should be at work. Phones out, pictures, selfies, social media posts. You're not going to believe this. Nobody comfortable, nobody's dry, nobody's leaving. I can absolutely see myself out there. Coffee in one hand, the other hand in my pocket, walking farther than I should, telling myself I'm just going to take a quick look. Like that's how it ever goes. Your phone buzzes, an email, bank alert, something about the mortgage, and you swipe it away without even reading it because there's a bottle half buried in the mud that needs a thorough investigation. For 10 minutes, you forget everything. Deadlines, bills, whatever dumb argument you had at home last week because it felt really big. None of that survives standing on the bottom of a lake that isn't supposed to have a bottom. You just wander, kick rocks, poke stuff with sticks. Like you're 8 years old and responsibility hasn't been invented yet. And the funny thing is, nobody tells you to do that. Nobody plans it. You just show up. Same as those dock hands did in 1844. Same way the fishermen showed up in Chicago. Same way we always do. The world does something strange and instead of backing away like sensible adults, we lean closer. Every time. And honestly, I kind of love that about us. We name things so we can live with them. Seiche, Meteo Tsunami, Bathtub Effect. Words make it feel smaller, contained, accounted for. The lake doesn't need our words. It leans when it leans. It leaves when it leaves. It comes back when it decides to come back. And every time, we show up. Not because we're reckless, not because we're foolish, because we're curious, because we want to see. Because for a few strange minutes, the world is different than it was yesterday, and we don't want to miss it. Maybe that's the part that matters. Not what we control, not what we understand, just that we show up when it moves. No moral, no instruction, just recognition.